Hey, everybody, I'm Mark Mulholland. Welcome to The Upbeat, a podcast about hope and perseverance from Kelly's Angels.
Hi, and I'm Heather Strotter from A Place of Yes, which is a podcast about how I moved through my darkest hour by channeling my grief into good.
And Heather, let's start with that. Let's start about talking about your darkest hour. I'm familiar with the organization. People in the Saratoga region are familiar with the organization called Jake's Help from Heaven. Tell me about Jake.
So Jake was my son. He was, you know, my second born, and he was born this healthy, incredible, like, you know, just charming baby. We used to always tell the story, you know, when you have your baby and they usually drop weight, right? Like when they leave the hospital and right after. Jake did not. Everyone, you know, I was nursing him and I always say this is probably too much information, but they were like, what is that, heavy cream? Like what's going on? He was just this like super happy, bouncy, easy baby until about 8 months when he had a seizure. And then he, you know, everything changed. We were in Children's Hospital for 117 days. He lost all of his milestones, to which he never regained them. And we just lived a really different life. He was still, you know, a bundle of perseverance. And I always think of that word when I think of Jake. And unfortunately, when he was 4 years old, he passed away. And that's where Jake's Help from Heaven came. We always say it's a very literal name, our organization, because it's we do believe that he is like guiding us and he is helping us and he is providing support to people from heaven.
What happened? What caused it?
That is the hardest part, Mark, because we have no answers. We have no idea what triggered that initial seizure. And I always like to clarify, because we think of a seizure, right? You think of kind of a grand mal seizure. You think of, you know, kind of dropping down to the floor. This was not that. This was a very subtle movement.
His arm?
Of his arm. It was like, we called it the twitch, and we still sort of do. It was super rhythmic, though, and you couldn't stop it. Because at first, we're like, well, maybe it's just a muscle spasm or something. But you could, if you hugged him, you could feel it. You could just feel that it was weird. And, you know, it was kind of, I don't know if it was mother's instinct or what it was, but something deep down was like, this is not right. And it was. It was his brain sending
a message.
Yeah, like kind of like basically seizing. And what we learned was from that point forward, was pretty much in a state of continual seizure. Like his EEG was just always active. So we don't know what started that. You know, in the beginning, and I've kind of shared this story before, like in the beginning we were at the hospital. We were Boston Children's, right? One of the best pediatric hospitals. And the doctors were testing for everything. And Brian and I were like super anxious, like, is it this? Is it that? And I remember them saying to us, you don't want it to be that. You know, you're better off not knowing, because the things we're testing for are really bad. You know, and the diagnosis, prognosis would be terrible. But sort of fast forward, we never found out. We had, there were a couple, like I was a vehement researcher, right? Like
sure.
I was always trying to, you know, Dr. Google, you know, trying to figure out things. And we had narrowed down, there's something called a leukodystrophy, which is sort of a rare genetic group of diseases.
Lorenzo's oil.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And actually, Jim Kelly, the quarterback, his son Hunter had a leukodystrophy.
Krebs disease.
Yeah, all of those kind of things. And we had sort of zeroed in, and we were working with a geneticist out of Mass General who was a pit bull. She was fantastic. Like, she was just getting things covered and tests covered. And I felt like we were very close, but we never got a diagnosis.
Does that bother you today?
On the days, like on those days, and I'm sure you know this, right? Like some days you think you're going about your life and everything is great. Yeah. And then you have those moments where you're like, what the hell happened? Like, why?
That's why they call it waves, right?
Yeah,
because it comes in waves.
100%. So on some of those days, I'm still pretty angry that we have nothing. Like in today's world where you can know everything.
Everything has a label.
Everything has a label. And how can we still not know what happened to my sweet boy? Like, how can we not know that? So that does upset me. The flip side is I remember those early days at Boston Children's when they were like, you know what? It doesn't really matter. We just got to figure out how to treat him and give him, like, figure out what he needs. And I think that is something that Brian and I did really well. We figured out how to keep him safe, how to keep him, relatively speaking, healthy, like, and how to be able to be home with his brother and with us and live a life.
You gave him a good life. For the little time he was here, you were able to give him the best possible life.
I do believe that. I believe that we really, we created a good little world for him and for us, you know, and we miss him still.
and his name will never be forgotten thanks to Jake's help from heaven. How did that come about? How did Jake's help from heaven come about?
So Jake's help from heaven was, you know, it's funny, through a place of yes, Brian and I have been talking so much more about those early days than we've had, you know, I think I've said like in like a decade, you know, we're having conversations and remembering conversations. But we knew, or I knew pretty early on, like I had not given up, but I had to stop the career that I had. Yeah. You know, I had stuff going on and I had to stop all of that to really just be full-time care for Jake. And when he was gone, I was like, what is going to happen? Like, you know, Ethan was already in kindergarten. Like, I was like, how am I going to, like, what am I going to do? And all I could think about were other kids that we had met in Jake's medical journey, right? Like kids in the hospital when we were there. And I always thought about them because we were so fortunate in the sense that we just picked up and moved to Boston. We put Ethan in a daycare program, so he wasn't at the hospital all the time. We had friends, we had family. Brian stayed at the hospital every night. Like, we were fortunate to be able to make that work. And so many of these other little boys and little girls, their families love them the same way that we love Jake, but they couldn't get time off. They couldn't just drop everything. Like, they couldn't relocate, you know. And we wanted to figure out, how can we take all those lessons that Jake taught us about what's really important in life and help kids that the families just needed it, you know, because it became so clear to us that even through these dark days and through the initial sickness and the fear and all of that, it became clear that even though it was horrible, we were still fortunate. And we were kind of lucky because we did get to spend all, like, we got to just hunker down as a family and be together. And not everyone had that gift or that opportunity.
And you're providing that gift to others.
And that is what Jake's Help from Heaven is. Jake's Help from Heaven is really about providing those opportunities, providing those experiences, not just for the person that's ill, but for the family. You know, that little bit, like, easing that burden of, you know, because a lot of families here, they know that the best care they can get is in Boston, or it's in New York, or it's at the Mayo Clinic, or it's at Johns Hopkins. You know, it's all at these other institutions, and they need help getting there. And that's one of the things that we provide, is just that opportunity to, you know what, we will reimburse you for your hotel stay. We'll reimburse you. We'll give you a food stipend. We'll help you get there. Just see the best. Do the best you can for your kid.
So you do that, and you provide adaptive equipment and those sorts of things. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we do our primary, about 40% of what we do each year is adaptive equipment. And that really, to me, is the heart of what Jake's Help from Heaven is, and mostly because, as much as our sort of mission has tweaked and grown and moved a little bit, we really still think of it as Jake. Like, you know, and we have one board member who at least once during the board meeting will be like, would Jake benefit from this? Like, what would Jake need this? And I love that it always comes down to that, right? It's awesome. So with that, a lot of the things, 40% of what we do is that equipment piece. In the early days, I would say it was probably 90%. You know, it was really was our initial goal and our initial focus. It has changed a little bit to where we do a lot of iPads for communication, a lot of the, like, Proloquo, different apps that are communication devices, a lot for autism. We do a lot of, like, sensory things. And one of the things that I always talk about, because, and I call it, it's super unglamorous, but we have a lot of, you know, older teens, adults, who still need, you know, diapers.
Yeah.
And what Medicaid provides is a shame, right? Like, it's a piece of paper. And here are these families who are struggling to give their family members the best life possible. And they're spending an insane amount of money on, like, diapers or ointments or things like that every month.
You're so providing a quality of life that they wouldn't otherwise have.
That they wouldn't. And we always like to say it looks super different, right? Like, what your family might need and what this family might need could be totally different. And we still, that as long as it's going to impact you, that's what we'll say yes to. Because sometimes people want to be like, oh, do you cover this or this? And we're like, no. And I love that you started to say that earlier when we were talking about Kelly's Angels, right? Like, yeah, it's not just a yes or no. It's sort of like, what can we do to make a difference? What can we do to help?
Exactly. And I love that you've titled your podcast A Place of Yes, because we often say, our board of directors, it's an all-volunteer charity as well, Kelly's Angels is, and we often say we come from a place of yes. Give us a reason to say no, and We never say it anyway. So that litmus test that you have provided, or that someone on your board will say, would Jake benefit from that? We did the same thing at Kelly's Angels. We say, what would Kelly think of this? Should we be doing this? Should we be helping these children? What would Kelly think? And we always say yes, of course. So
let me ask you a question, Mark.
Sure.
So I was thinking about this as we were getting ready, and I just, you know, so many organizations start out of places like ours, yeah. right? Because it's that feeling, right? Like,
yeah.
like, so did you know you were going to start this? Like, was it sort of right away or
no.
was it, and it's always hard to remember. Like
it
I
is.
Said this, I'm like, was it the days? Was it the weeks? Was it the months?
It's a blur, right? Because those days are, we're trying to figure out life. We're trying to navigate. You were trying to navigate life without Jake. I was trying to navigate life without Kelly and having two small children as well. So I don't remember the exact day, but I remember we wanted to do something. Kelly was a teacher in the Saratoga Springs School District. She loved kids. Kids loved her. She was the teacher who, at the end of the day, at 10 o'clock at night, the janitor would come and say, Kelly, it's time to come home. Go home now.
Yep.
You can't be here any longer. But she would want to make her room perfect. She was that elementary school teacher that we were all fortunate to have. Third grade.
Okay.
So she was that teacher everyone wanted. Because she loved the kids. Annie, she was empathetic and sympathetic. So we spent as much time providing things for some of her less fortunate kids as we did providing for our own kids. So you can relate to that. So we knew something we wanted to do in Kelly's memory. We wanted to help children in some way. So a bunch of my friends and I sat around in our family room in Wilton and said, what are we going to do? How are we going to honor Kelly? And I said, well, I want to do something that honors her legacy of helping children. And I also want to be able to help kids who've lost a parent to cancer. At that time, my children were just 7 and 5.
Oh, wow.
We were trying to navigate the world without the love of their life and the
yep.
love of my life. And we said, how about an organization which provides fun grants to kids? Let's let children who've lost a parent to cancer go on a trip, a bouncy house party, a Yankees game, a Rangers game, a Broadway show, a shopping spree, anything that will bring smiles to their face. So that it was born. It was born out of a conversation in my family room in Wilton, and it was off and running. First few years, it was difficult. The most difficult part was finding families to help. Because this was such a unique new organization, people didn't know what it was.
Well, it's hard to get the word
yes,
out, right?
Our yeah. First, did you struggle with that
we
as well?
We did. Our first board meeting had 4 applications. Now we're a minimum of like 65, you know? I mean, it's wild. But our first one was 4, and they were people that I knew. Like, I basically solicited them. I was
yeah.
like, we can help you. Like, apply.
Sure. That's a happiness problem, though, isn't it?
Yes.
To have 65
yes.
now? You hope that the need will not always be there. But isn't it nice that you're in a place where you can meet that need?
We're in a place where we can meet the need, and we are in a place where, like, we have people who, and I'm sure you might, well, I don't, like, we have people who come back every
yeah.
year, right? You know, because we've always said, we have kind of a cap that we follow per year, per family. But we have people who've come, you know, who've been with us since 2012, 2013, and we are just kind of a part of their family now, right? Like, we are something, and sometimes they come for the same thing. Like, sometimes it's the last 5 years, we've done diapers for a bunch of families, or we have done hippotherapy, or we've just covered their medical travel.
What would they do without you?
That's, I mean, not to be over dramatic,
yeah.
but sometimes that is what keeps me up at night, right? Because, you know, when we started this, and I'm curious about what you thought when you started Kelly's Angels, we knew we had to do that at the moment, but we had no long-term plans. Like, it was sort of like what we needed to do to survive.
You're winging it,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
You, you know you want to do it. You know you want to do it in your loved one's memory, but you don't know 5 years,
and
what are we going to be doing?
I can tell you, we did not think we would be where we are now. We didn't not think it, but we didn't, you know what I mean? We didn't know that we would have grown as much. We wouldn't know that we'd have the impact we have on the families. We've awarded $1.6 million.
That's
fantastic. It's wild, yes. right? Like,
yeah.
and sometimes Brian and I are like, we didn't know what we were doing. I'm not entirely sure we still do. You know what I mean? Like we made it. But it's just come out of that, you know, that love and that need to, you know, be able to talk about our people, right? Like, talk about Jake, talk about Kelly. But what stresses me, and I don't mean to say stresses me out, but, you know, life's changing, right? Like, we're getting older. Ethan's in college. We're sort of empty nesters. Like, I don't always know how we're going to balance that. And sometimes when we think about, like, oh, what are the next steps for Jake's, you know, I'm not at the place yet where I can really have that conversation. You know, we have a great board and they'll give me ideas and I'm like, no, no, no. So I'm not really at the place where I can hear anything yet, but I also know that I can't do this forever.
Right.
But then I think of the families. I think of the families that have come to us every year for the last 10, 11 years and we can't disappear,
no.
You know? So it's a good dilemma to have, but it is something on my mind, right? Because
it's there's pressure there.
There's
right?
pressure a little bit.
So Ethan, you mentioned Ethan a couple of times. Ethan is Jake's older brother.
Yes.
What, about 16 months
yes,
older?
Yes, exactly. 16
months older. He's in college now.
He is. He's a freshman at Syracuse.
Has he expressed any interest yet in helping Jake's help from heaven?
It's so interesting to me, and we have such an open relationship, especially now. Like, you know, he calls me every day from school.
Love it.
And I love it. Like, it does not matter what I'm doing. It does not matter how busy I am. Like, Brian will be like, sometimes I'm like, well, I talked to Ethan for 45 minutes, so it kind of threw my day all off, but I will never not pick up that phone, and I will never not.
I love that he's calling mom still.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny. In the beginning, he was calling not as much. Now he's really found his rhythm, really, and kind of, like, balanced things out a little bit. And we're just in this really great place. And we do, he's at that point where he's really enjoying his classes. He likes his major. Like, he's kind of excited with, you know, feeling like all the opportunities. So I don't ever want it to feel like it's something he has to do.
Or it doesn't need to define him, right?
Exactly.
I mean, because people know him as Jake's older brother.
100%. And I just want him to, or it's like, you know, I love that he's finding his own way a little bit. Because it's a little, you know, not that Saratoga's a small town, but it's a small town,
sure is,
right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, people know that his brother died. People know that his mom is always out there talking about it. They know that his grandfather owned the hotels. His dad works at Turf Hotel. You know, like he's known by all of these other things. And I want him to find something that I don't want him to feel defined by any of that. I want him to like find his own way. With that being said, nothing would make me happier than if he chose to become more involved, you know, and it's great. Like last summer, a little bit, he did some deliveries for us, like him and his friends. Like I was like kind of overwhelmed with some stuff. And he's like, Mom, schedule it. We'll do it.
Your deliveries are awesome, by the way.
They're
I've seen
great.
Some on social media and it couldn't be more pure. You've provided some sort of equipment. You've purchased some sort of equipment that will improve the life of the person you're helping. And you show up there with this and allow them to try it and test it. And it's pure.
It's one of the best things I think that we do because we remember so vividly, like Jake needed so much equipment, right? Like there was just always things and you would finally get it, but then you just didn't have the time to build it and to like, you know, everything is hard, right? Like everything can be complex in those moments. So we try to take that, like we don't just buy it, but we build it, deliver it, or pay for someone to build it and stuff so that you're not just getting something sent to you in a box that then, no matter how much you need it, could sit there for another 2 weeks because you just don't have the time or the, you know what I mean? Like the bandwidth to do it. So we try to just, and those deliveries are great.
I want to talk a little bit more about where Jake's help from heaven will go. Years, 10, 15, 20 years from now. And I want to talk a little bit about where Kelly's Angels will go. Is now a good time to take a break?
Yeah,
you good
sure.
with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And we'll be right back with more of the Upbeat Podcast, a podcast about hope and perseverance from Kelly's Angels.
Support for Kelly's Angels comes from the students and faculty at South Guns Falls High School in upstate New York who hold a 24-hour marathon dance each year to benefit local charities. Kelly's Angels is proud to be among the beneficiaries of the South High Marathon Dance. We are grateful for their generosity and kindness. The Niemer Motor Group, a family-owned company that includes Ford, Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, and Ram automobile dealerships that have been serving drivers in Queensbury, Saratoga Springs, Latham, and surrounding areas of upstate New York since 1971. Follow them on social media at Niemer Motor Group.
Support also comes from Stewart's Shops, an employee and family-owned convenience store chain serving eastern upstate New York and southwestern Vermont.
Welcome back to The Upbeat, a podcast about hope and perseverance from Kelly's Angels. We're talking to Heather Strotter, who is the founder of Jake's Help from Heaven, based in Saratoga Springs, in memory of her son, Jake, who lost his battle at age 4. after a long, difficult battle. And she started an organization with her husband, Brian, called Jake's Help from Heaven, and also hosts a podcast now called A Place of Yes. Before we took a little break, Heather, we were talking about what happens with Jake's Help from Heaven 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, and the pressure that you sometimes feel, because how long can you continue to do what you do for so many people? And I can tell you that I've thought about that as well. We have an all-volunteer board, Kelly's Angels does, 17 people on it, including both of my children. Connor was 7 at the time Kelly passed. McKenna was 5. They have done well, but they miss her every day.
I'm sure.
And I think Kelly's Angels has allowed them an outlet to feel their mom a little bit. I think that because of the work we're doing in the community and because we're helping children in the community, I think that allows them, I think they would tell you that that allows them to feel closer to their mom.
So I have a question about that. So when did they start? Did they start when they were young on the board?
Connor started at about, they both started at about 16.
Okay.
So 16 or 17, right around that time. At a time when I felt they were mature enough to do that.
So it's funny you say that. That was always our vision, I think, that Ethan and a friend maybe, so he wouldn't feel like the pressure,
sure,
just would kind of be junior members. And then COVID hit.
Yeah.
And that sort of changed. I mean,
everyone's
changed everything,
yeah.
But it's also like we had a while where we weren't having in-person meetings. We were doing our things in Zoom. We skipped, you know, I mean, it was, and then by the time we were on the other side of that, it seemed like an odd time to have him come in when it was about to be, like he would, you know, he would really only have been in for like a year.
Sure.
And it changed. But we, I love that your kids are both very involved with Kelly's Angels, and I'm sure it helps them.
They've embraced it. They see how much we're able to do. Our little charity that I told you started in our family room in Wilton, we gave away not nearly as much as Jake's Help from Heaven, but we gave away just last year $103,000 to local kids and families who need it. So they see that, and I think they're proud of it. And I think that especially for my daughter, I don't think she would mind me saying this.
I feel like I say that all the time on this podcast.
You
never know.
You never know. And they'll let us know, too.
They sure will.
But she was so young when Kelly was diagnosed. Kelly was just 32 when she was diagnosed.
Okay.
McKenna was not quite a year old.
Okay.
So she remembers her mom being ill, but she doesn't remember much else. She was 5 years old when Kelly passed away. And I think she struggles with the fact that she doesn't have a lot of memories of her. So this allows her to have a connection.
I'm sitting here with Mark Mulholland, who is News Channel 13 director, for those who are local who are listening, for the, not news director, you know.
Anchor.
Could be the director.
Sure.
And he lost his wife, Kelly, to cancer, and he, similar to us, started a nonprofit, Kelly's Angels. And I hate what we both have been through, right? But I love that we both handled this incredible, horrible experience. And some would say, you know, so I lost a child, you lost a spouse. Like, those are really big losses. And we have turned them into these other things. We've used them to give everybody, not just ourselves, but people around us, this chance to talk about our people. And for me, I always say we selfishly started it because we wanted to keep Jake in the room. We wanted to speak to him. And I don't know if you had that experience, but like after Jake died, it's almost like people, it was like this awkward silence sometimes. Like people didn't want to talk about it. And that broke my heart and it made me angry, you know, in those time afterwards. So did you experience that? Like,
yes.
And I imagine everyone knows who you are locally. So I feel like then people sometimes just, it's like the elephant in the room.
People don't know what to say. Now it's much better now. But back then people don't know what to say. And we've all been in that position, right? You don't really know what to say. I'm sorry is not enough, but it is. Sometimes all you need to hear is I'm sorry, right? And that's all you need to hear. But there were awkward times, certainly, especially as it relates to expectations from people of moving on. Don't you hate that term, by the way, moving on? We don't move on from grief. We move forward with the person in our heart.
Yes.
We don't move on.
And we keep them present.
Of course we do.
Absolutely.
But it might be a little different with the spouse. Yeah. But it may not. That, have you moved on? You ready to date now? Please don't say that.
Right. And I would think that it's almost that I do think people get themselves nervous, right? Like they don't know what to say and they don't want to not say anything. But then sometimes,
yes,
you know, like
they say the wrong thing.
They say, yes. And yeah. It's wild. Yeah.
Did you experience that as well? I'm curious, Heather. Did people say, stop grieving already? Because people do. We tend to put
a timeline
on grief.
So we got a lot of so you're going to have another kid. And I was like, we are absolutely not going to have another kid, which we had already decided we were. You know what I mean? Like in my mind, I didn't see that was a natural reaction, but it was a real reaction to a lot of people. So I think probably the parallel to, are you ready to date yet, was, oh, so you're going to have another child.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, you know? And then some people had judgment on that too. Like, and I'm sure people had judgment on whether you were dating too soon or not soon enough or whatever. But people were like, oh, but you know, it's not fair to Ethan to not have, give him a sibling.
Because we have that picture in our mind of what we think is going to make you happy.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly. So I'm going to ask you this question too, just because I don't always get the opportunity to talk to people. But right after Jake passed, there was this like movement of people who really wanted to medicate me. And I thought it was the weirdest thing because I was really about like feeling the feels. Like that's just who I am, right? Like I, not that I didn't, you know, sometimes want to drink more than probably I should or whatnot. But I certainly was not like, you know, ready to be knocked out with like medication. But there was a real sort of like, oh, Heather needs to rest. Let her rest. Or like if I was crying, you know, and I was kind of like, no. Yeah. Did you have that?
I did. Two things occurred to me when you just said that. My doctor, I only go to a doctor once a year for physicals. And shortly after Kelly passed, and the following 2 or 3 years, he tried to talk me into taking some sort of relaxing medication. I don't even know what it was called. I always turned it down. In fact, in hindsight, maybe I could have used it.
Now I'm kind of like,
Because I had a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old, sole surviving parent. Crazy town. I don't remember half of it, but I knew that I had to work.
You had to be present.
I had to be present, and I had the games, and I had to both do the job of dad and the job of my job that I get paid for. So that was a crazy time. But the first time it was at Kelly's wake.
Yes, right away.
Yes. Because she fought a very public battle, and perhaps because of the nature of her job being a teacher and being exposed to a lot of people and my job being exposed to a lot of people, the huge crowd at the wake. In fact, people I didn't even know, which I was moved by, probably, I don't know, 1,500 or so people.
Wow.
And someone comes up to me, a woman comes up to me and whispers in my ear, I didn't know her. She said, Mark, I've got something for you. I'm like, okay. She's like, it's in my pocket, grab it.
Stop it.
And I said, I don't really know if that's appropriate. She's like, no, take it. It's Xanax.
Oh my God.
and I said, no, I think, thank you, I really appreciate that, but I didn't take it. So that's funny that you should raise that.
It's always been something where I was like, of all the things that I would say to someone, it's never that. But so, okay. Oddly, that makes me feel better because I was like, maybe they just thought I was a mess. But I think it's just
natural reaction. And it occurred to me, too, that something you said about the first episode of your podcast, I listened to it with Brian and I thought it was terrific because you guys shared all of those stories that you hadn't even spoken about in 10 or 12 years, or I guess, how many years? 10 years?
So he's been gone 13 years, but I feel like we haven't had some of those conversations because life just happens, right? Like we try to keep Jake super present, but we don't, you know, over dinner talk about, oh, remember when before he got sick? We just don't, you know, you have moments, right? Like, or a picture will turn up and we'll be like, oh, remember this? But it was the first time in easily 10 plus years that we've talked about some of these things.
Was that hard? Or was it cathartic? Or was it both?
It was cathartic, I would say. I was trying to think of the word, and I would think that is it. He was, I think, a little nervous. I'm always more comfortable being unscripted. Like, you know, Brian and I he's an excellent public speaker, but he will work on his speech. He will practice. He like goes into the room by himself. He really locks in and he delivers. Like he can knock it out of the park. I don't do that. Like I sort of just sit down, and I think why I'm enjoying this podcast so much is it's just conversations, right? It's just talking about things that are important to me with people that I want to have these conversations with. So he, like, it was kind of a meeting of both of our, he was very nervous and he was like kind of coming into, like out of his comfort zone. But I think once he just like stopped, he realized we're just talking, like we're just talking about these things. And I think it was cathartic, I think, for both of us. And it's not something that we will probably, you know, bring up these topics again all the time. But it was really nice to talk about them. And it was nice for me to hear his perspective, because I can get so wrapped up in my own perspective that I, you know, like he told this story about.
Are you both type A? You're type A, right?
Yeah. We're in different ways, but yeah, we're a lot. But he was talking about how he, like, it was so hard for him to realize that Jake was never going to play Little League. Yeah. You know, like he grew up an athlete and he, you know, was a D1 football college athlete, you know, and Ethan was such an athlete. I think I never thought about that part of grieving. And one of the things we talk about in A Place of Yes is that, you know, grief isn't just the loss of these significant people in our life, right? Like you grieve the life you thought you were going to have, and you grieve that picture in your mind.
Like you wanted to walk on the
beach
with 100%. Both
Ethan and
Jake,
right? Always what I still, and I've said it, like it's this piece that can just bring me to tears still, you know, just because it's obviously never going to happen. And for Brian to hear him talk about the Little League, right? Like it's just such a, you know, it just made me feel so much closer to him and so much more connected, you know, just, so I was so happy to have him as a guest. And yeah, it was great.
And a husband.
A guest on my podcast, but more importantly, a husband as well.
you made me think of some things that still break my heart to this day. When I think about those things that both Kelly is missing out on and my children, Connor and McKenna, are missing out with Kelly. The proms, the weddings, she won't be there. All of those type moments, which you described, like Little League and walking on
the
beach,
things.
It still breaks my heart.
It's. I don't know that it will ever stop, right? Yeah. I mean, those are just, they're parts of our story and they're just, they were supposed to be different.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, it's just hard,
I think.
It's
not the way it was supposed to be.
No, it's not the way it was supposed to be. And I feel like that's so cliche to say, but it wasn't supposed to end that way, you know? And so tell me, and if this is too much, certainly say no.
Not at all.
But so McKenna was one when Kelly got diagnosed.
Yeah.
So that's got to be hard.
It was hard.
I mean, that's got to, so you've got, and how old was Connor?
Connor was 3.
Okay. And so she fought for.
She did. Actually, so she's diagnosed at 32. No history of cancer in the family.
None.
At all.
Okay. Which always terrifies
came
me.
Came out of nowhere. I remember we went to the doctor's appointments. I was at work. I got called by the doctor. The surgeon had told me, this isn't cancer. Don't worry about it. No problem.
Oh, really?
And then I get a call at work from the surgeon saying, are you sitting down? He called me first. He wanted to talk to me first. And he said, it's cancer. And I've been doing this for 30 years. I would have never thought it's cancer, but it's cancer. So we have to remove it. So she removed it. We got it removed. And then we went through the radiation and chemo. She had an awful time with chemo.
How long was the chemo period?
Seems like forever, but it was about a year.
Okay.
And then she was in remission. So we thought we'd beaten it.
Okay.
We thought we were all set. And then she had some pain in her sternum about a year and a half later. And it turns out it had come back and it had metastasized to her bones. But still, it was always when she gets better, much like Jake, yep. not if she gets better. So we're picturing the life that's going to happen when she gets better, much as you were picturing
yeah,
the life as when Jake gets better. So it wasn't that way, obviously. It wasn't meant to be. So we had run out of options here in the United States, and we were fortunate enough to have friends have a fundraiser so we could go to Mexico for some alternative
treatment.
It was against my better judgment, and we had some fights about it.
So she wanted to go.
She wanted to go.
Because she wanted to just know she tried everything.
Exactly. Yep. That's exactly right. So our doctor, our local oncologist, Dr. Rufus Kalia, who is at NYOH, New York Oncology Hematology, sat me down and said, go. He said, I don't know that they can do anything, but why not offer her some hope? So it was a hospital in Mexico called Oasis of Hope. In hindsight, it was terrible.
Okay.
They didn't really know what they were doing, but we had to go. So we went. She was supposed to be there for 8 weeks, as I recall. Might be more or less than that. I brought her there, stayed with her there for a week. The children were back here.
I was going to say,
My in-laws were watching the kids. So I got her settled, came back.
And what was that like? That must have been horrible.
That was difficult, leaving her in Mexico. Yes. Yeah. So she was doing okay at that point,
okay.
but she was filled with cancer. So I left her there and then came back because we had kids, young kids at home. And then one of her best friends went down. And one of the best friends calls me one night after, I guess she'd been there 3 or 4 weeks, and said, she's not doing well at all. So I said, well, can you put her on the phone? Again, she's calling from Mexico. And I said, honey, do you want to come home? And she said, she was having trouble breathing. She said, yes, I do. So this is the middle of the night. I scrambled to Albany Airport, get on a flight, try to get arrangements to get her home. And she needed oxygen.
Oh, God.
And the hospital in Mexico didn't have enough oxygen to get us to the airport, which was terrible.
Mark.
Oh, terrible experience. So I'm on the phone with the airline because the airlines have oxygen for people. So we managed to get on the plane in San Diego. Because we'd crossed over the border, and they provided some oxygen for us. So we got on the plane early, like an hour and a half before everyone else boarded, so she could breathe. So we touched down in Albany. We go to Albany Med, and I said, we're going right to the hospital once we get off the plane, and we did. We went to the ER. She was having trouble breathing, and they did some scans, and they called me out and said her lungs are now completely filled with cancer, and she's not going to live. So that was the first time we'd had that discussion. So I have to go into the emergency room now, into her room in ICU at this point, and tell her what the doctors had said. Because we were still expecting when she gets better that this was just a setback, you know? So I told her that. We cried. We spent the night in the ICU together. I spent the night with her, and she made it through the night. And I said, honey, do you want to go home? Like, want to go home?
Yeah.
And she said, yes, I do. She wanted to go home. And I moved mountains and heaven and earth to get her home because when someone is critically ill, they don't want to transport. They don't want to transport, right? Because there's some liability and all those things. So I moved heaven and earth, got the okay for her to go home. And it's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon now. I race up the Northway so I can get Connor and McKenna off the school bus. Because they
talk about like balancing all these.
Oh, yeah. So I'm racing. I race up the Northway and I get them off the bus and they're excited to see me because they knew that they didn't know what was going on, but they knew that daddy was going to pick up mommy. So I said, well, mommy's home. She's at the hospital now. She's coming home. And they're happy about that. And I said, well, remember how we've always talked about when mommy's going to get better? And they said, yes. And I said, well, she's not going to get better. She's going to go to heaven. And they both started crying. I started crying. And as kids will do, they get up and hug me. And in unison, they say, can we have our snack now? Because that's what kids...
Because they don't even know what to think about.
That's what kids do.
Oh, Mark.
But I'm forever thankful, as they are, that we got three or four days where she was at home. She was completely with it. She just wasn't well. She had full amount of oxygen we could give her. And the kids got to read to her in bed and we got to feed her strawberries. And she's, again, completely with it. And we had, it sounds funny to say, but we had a beautiful experience over those 3 or 4 days.
No, it's not funny to say. I think that is an absolute gift. And I think I am sure that is what's so important to your kids too, right? Like those So a little bit different because Jake passed unexpectedly, but he was at the funeral home that is across the street virtually from our house. And one of the things that the funeral director did for us was once he was there and he was in the coffin and stuff, he left the back door open. And same, not the same, but he was like, I'm just going to let you guys know that it's open. You can come in at any time. And at first I was like, it's ridiculous. Like no, I was kind of.
It's so sweet, isn't it?
It was the nicest, most amazing thing ever. And when I tell you that the three of us, it was like 2 a.m. one time, I was like, I got to go see Jake, right? And and I just went across with like my blanket. And then once we woke up Ethan, and like we just had these moments.
Beautiful.
And different, but that same, I know, I mean, jealous is a weird word to use in this, but like the fact that you guys had that, those days.
I'll always be grateful for
it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about the Mexico? Because I agree, that's 100% what you had to give that to her. You had to let her see that through.
It was
but do you struggle
contention.
With that?
No, because we were able to resolve it.
Okay.
We went back and forth on
it. I'm sure.
And, you know, she was the woman I loved. She was the woman of my dreams. I married her. It wasn't supposed to be this way. And it was only because I wanted what was best for her.
Yes.
We didn't
of course.
Know. It was
no,
a great
of course.
Unknown in Mexico. And I think she came around to that. But it was that conversation with her oncologist when he said, I don't have anything for her. Why not? Why not give her some
it's
hope?
It's not going to, yeah, give her. So, and if it means something to her.
But I did struggle with it at the time.
I'm sure.
As she did. And I know she journaled about it.
Okay.
So.
Do you ever read her journals?
I don't.
You don't?
I don't. And in fact, after she passed away, I didn't open them.
Okay.
Because I know some of them were she was angry about me, and that was personal, very intimate. If she wanted to tell me those things, she would tell me.
Yeah.
But if there was something that she wanted to journal, I never wanted to read them.
That is excellent restraint. I'm not sure that I would always have had that. But I admire that, and I think that's great. I mean, but that's a testament to your story, to your love story.
It was hard.
That is respect, and that's wonderful. Well, Mark, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm sorry too. But we've both turned grief into good, which I'm proud of, and I'm sure you're proud of
it. I am really proud of it. I you know, in those early days, right, like when your whole world has blown up, I remember thinking so vividly, and I've said this in a couple of things, and you've kind of referenced it too. It's like you don't know that you remember things exactly right, right?
Right.
You remember.
No, because it's chaotic. It's a blur.
Chaotic. It's all of it is chaotic. And I don't know, some things are so like, I feel like it happened in the days after, but it really wasn't. You know, I have no idea. But I felt when I was going through my grief and I was such a, you know, so heartbroken that I had to, like, it's almost like I had to be two people. Like, I had to grieve very privately, but I had to be a mom. And you've kind of referenced it too. So you had to have your moments when you had to let it all out, but then you had to be dad and you had to kind of be mom and you had to be strong, right?
So absolutely. Absolutely. I would cry at night. Because I felt, and I don't know if it was the right thing to do. There's no playbook for this sort of thing.
No, but no one tells you what to do.
But you put on the face, put on the strong face for your children.
Yeah.
Because that's what you have to do. Two things occur to me. One, shortly after Kelly passed away, she passed away in October, just 5 or 6 days after her birthday, I went to a grief support group, which was for someone who'd suffered a loss of spouse. And I was the youngest there by probably 25, 30 years. And there were one after another, people would stand up and again, they're grieving. So this is not a judgment, but they're standing up saying, well, the topic was dealing with loss at the holidays because it was Christmas time. Well, what I remember when I lost my spouse, we didn't even put up a tree. I didn't want to put up a tree. And I'm sitting there thinking, I got a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Yeah. Santa's going to come.
You think I'm not going to put up a tree?
Yeah.
So that was a different, we were in a different place.
Oh, look at all the presents.
They all have the same wrapping paper.
You did leave 2 carrots.
Because there was 2 extras. 9. He has 9 reindeer. Look,
he left a note, too.
Ooh.
Read that last
one. 1 o'clock a.m. Merry Christmas, Connor, McKenna, and Mark. It doesn't say... And Danny, I hope you enjoy the gifts I brought for you. You are 2 of the nicest children I visit in North America.
Wow, that's nice.
Whoa.
Please continue to be good. Listen for your father. Thank you for the treats. I love the brownies. Gotta fly.
I
need
this.
What is it?
Mr. Darcy.
Yes.
What is it?
Mm-hmm.
Only needed
9
carrots.
Whoa.
Hey, what's this say on the first one?
Daddy.
What do you have there, bud?
The thing he wanted.
Nice.
And the other was when someone said to me, When do you grieve? And I started crying then. But it was I would grieve at night. Yeah. After I got the kids, finally, I could breathe. I could take a breath. I had the lunches made and those sorts of things. I could go into my room and cry myself.
But it's like you had to have almost, like I always felt like I had like two personalities.
Yes, because you wanted to do what was right for Ethan.
Yes, 100%. You had to do right by them. But then you also, it was like a whirlwind of chaos.
Yeah.
So in those last days, right, like when she comes home and you're all together, like, did the kids go to school? Like, or did you all, like, what was that like? And I say that honestly, and this is weird, but a little jealous, because that is, I think that's such a beautiful time that you were able to have together. As tragic and sad as the ending, it's beautiful.
It is a beautiful time, and I'll always be grateful for it. But the kids did go to school. In fact, I remember the email. Email was fairly new, I guess, 15 years ago, almost. Yeah, 15 years ago. I remember writing the email to both of the kids' teachers saying, we're trying to keep things as normal as possible. I said, Kelly is home now and her time with us is ending. And I just want to let you know we're sending the kids, but I may be pulling them out at a moment's notice. Yeah. And I heard from both teachers first. The one teacher, McKenna, was in kindergarten, and her teacher emailed me back saying, now that I've gathered myself, now that I've stopped crying and had to excuse myself from the classroom, I will honor your wishes and do whatever you want. So just call me and you can pick up McKenna immediately. But they did. That was the goal, to have them have things as normal as possible. Now, actually, I don't think I've shared this story, but when Kelly passed away, she was dying and we knew the end was near. Both Connor and McKenna went to a friend's in our neighborhood.
Okay.
Because we knew the time was near. So I called them and had them come back and say goodbye to mommy. That was not easy.
No.
So they got on the bed and they said goodbye to her. And
do you think they understood?
I do. Okay. I do. At least they knew that she was going to heaven.
Yeah.
Because they both did it. In fact, my son wrote his college essay about that particular experience.
Okay.
And he talked about how the clock was his enemy. And he talked about tick-tock, and he knew that with each passing second or minute that it was going to be.
That it was going to,
So they came back from a friend's house, and then immediately after she passed away, friends in our neighborhood decided to put luminaria throughout our entire neighborhood. Oh, there were thousands of them.
That's
which was absolutely beautiful. And the kids, my children, I'll always be grateful for this as well. They were able to help place the luminaria throughout the neighborhood. So it was
like, a way to take that moment though and create something
that was
larger almost.
And there are, and I don't know how much McKenna remembers because she was five, but we have some video and some photos of those too that I love to have.
So it's interesting. You made me think of something. So, you know, the day after Jake passed, we sent Ethan to school. And I wish I could say that it was like this well thought out thing that we were trying to keep life normal, but we didn't, you know.
Know what to do.
We didn't know what to do. So we sent him to school and we had, you know, we kind of let his teacher know. He was in kindergarten also. And his kindergarten teacher, and it sounds like the same for McKenna, I mean, will always have such a special place in my heart. Like I told the story, I think before, of that I ran into her on like Spring Run Trail and I basically assaulted her. Like I was like hugged her. I was like, Mrs. Somoza, I love you so much. You know, like
sure.
We just have this connection because you depend on people. You need other people to help you in that dark time. And the people that show up will always have that special place, right? Like I'm sure your neighbors, like just there's certain people that it's almost like they have a free pass for everything.
Absolutely.
It's, right?
Like I'm thinking of someone right now. Yeah. The day Kelly passed away, before I had Connor and McKenna say goodbye to her and before I said goodbye to her, one of her favorite students, you know, teachers have favorite students.
Oh, of course.
They'll tell you they're not supposed to, but they do. One of her favorite students was a boy named Connor LaFrance. I don't know if you
Oh, I do. I do.
So Connor, while we were in Mexico, Connor was killed.
Yes.
In a motocross accident. He was a world-class motocrosser.
Yeah.
And he was killed. And Kelly felt so badly about it. You know, she's at this hospital in Mexico. Yeah. I was with her at the time. And word got to us. She was shattered by it. She had a special connection with Connor. Connor was that kid who just she connected with and he connected with her. So when we got home she was dying. I invited, because she felt horrible that she couldn't get to the funeral or the wake or anything. We're in Mexico. I invited Dave and Andrea, Connor's parents, to the house. They came to the house. And it was almost like she'd had unfinished business because they sat with her for a few minutes and she told them how fond she was of Connor and how much she liked their involvement in the class. And they prayed with her and cried with her and they left. She died half hour after they
left.
So that was, they are people, right?
You just have this like, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The other interesting connection, I think that, so Connor wrote his essay about that.
Yeah.
Ethan wrote his college essay about having to call 911. You know, when
on the night Jakey was.
Yeah. Because when it became really clear to me that something was happening, I screamed at Ethan to call 911, a 5-year-old, you know?
Five, yeah.
And we didn't talk about it a lot until really his senior year. And he wrote this really poignant, beautiful essay. And it's funny, you say, you know, you don't know what McKenna remembers at five. They remember a lot,
they
I think.
Do, yeah.
Or maybe not the exact, but they know the, you know, I was surprised by his essay. I was very touched by it. It was very beautiful.
If he sits down with you for the podcast, will you ask him to read it?
I'm not sure. Like, I don't want to say I'm nervous to ask him to sit. Like, I just don't know if he's there yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just.
There's no hurry.
No, there's no hurry. I would love to have him be a guest. I just, there's still the mom part of me that wants to protect him still from some of this. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know why, because he obviously experiences the grief and you know, I mean, of course he does and he knows, but I just, there is that part of me that still wishes I could make it better for him.
He might find it cathartic as well.
No,
I get it. You want to protect him at all costs.
Yeah, no, I would love for him to be a guest on, you know.
Connor did. Connor and McKenna
did our
podcast.
Okay.
And we asked.
Well, I hear McKenna doing the ad sometimes.
She does. Yeah. She thanks our underwriters for us. But Connor read his essay. And by the way, I didn't know anything about the essay. You know, it's kind of my thing, writing.
Yeah.
And he didn't share any of it with me. And it was all his, which makes it even better.
Better.
It was really good. I was proud of him. And it helped get him into college, I guess.
Tick-tock. A clock was ticking in my head, counting downward. I couldn't envision the hands coming to a halt, but I knew it was inevitable, and the time would soon come. Tick-tock. I needed time to slow down. I begged, I pleaded with time, but it was hopeless. Time wouldn't yield. Time was merciless and didn't care how much I begged or pleaded. A shadowy figure blocked my view of the TV, and my mind returned to my body. It was my aunt. I knew why she wanted my attention. In my head, I gave one final effort to convince time to slow down, knowing that the last few strokes of the clock were approaching. Tick-tock, tick-tock. Connor, it's time. I dreaded this moment. It couldn't actually be happening. Not to me. I felt claustrophobic, like the world was closing in on me, and there was nothing I could do. I rose from my chair, dragging myself upstairs and into my parents' room, where I saw my father's teary eyes looking down at me. "Come give your mom one last hug before she goes to heaven," my dad said somberly, as he pulled me close to my dying mom. I squeezed and squeezed, not wanting to let go, but I knew the clock was winding to its final sweep. "I love you," I whispered. Tick-tock, tick-tock. The clock had reached zero and my time with my mom had expired. I reluctantly let her go in disbelief that this was really it, but it was. We were both too young. She was 32. Things weren't the same after. Very little talking was done inside the house. My dad, sister, and I all became distant, and I became very independent, quiet, and shy. I did everything on my own. During this time, I started thinking about the world and all that could be better with it. I began to write, jotting down all my ideas and wanting to solve every world issue, from a robot that makes your bed to a cure for cancer, the menace that had affected my life profoundly. No problem seemed too big to my curious 7-year-old mind. Years later, still too young for a job, I got the entrepreneurship bug. From selling water and lemonade daily outside Saratoga Racecourse, to begging my dad to take me from garage sale to garage sale to find hidden gems that I could earn a dollar to reinvest. My love for business and working for myself blossomed as I began to notice endless possibilities of entrepreneurship. As I grew and matured, I immersed myself in new business ventures, selling shoes, clothing, software, and phone accessories. Although many failed, it was the lessons I learned from these failures that allowed me to have the occasional success. In 2015, when I was 15 years old, I was elected to the board of a new charity founded in memory of my mom, created by my father. We provide grants to children like me who've lost a parent to cancer. The grants can be used for anything that will bring a smile to the kid's face. Trips, games, Broadway shows. My work on the board gives me a real understanding of professional business and has grown my love for business. It's also shown me that no matter how small you think you are as an individual, you can make a lasting impact in someone's life. It validates my belief that as long as you're determined and eager to work hard, you can do anything. My experience on the board and in business has taught me to ask, how can I, instead of saying, I can't. I've learned to never give up, no matter how daunting the task may seem, and most of all, it taught me, in most cases, failure just opens the door for success. I want to be an entrepreneur, not for money or fame or power, but to make the world a happier, safer, easier, and overall better place to live. My name is Connor Mulholland, and I want to change the world.
We've all experienced loss.
Yeah.
You and I, it's a little fresher, maybe a little more forward public facing, but there are so many things that we all have in common. I think that's why we're both doing a podcast.
So you talked about that like support group you went to.
Yeah.
So we went to one similar, and we brought Ethan because it was, you know, for families, like it was, you know, lost us.
Yes.
I don't even remember. I think it was for like, they've lost a sibling, but also was for, if you lost a child, I don't remember.
Wave riders.
That's what it was. It was wave riders. That's 100% what it was. Yeah. And again, I want to preface this. It was not judgmental at all, but it was so many people in such different places,
you know,
and it goes to show that people grieve differently and they handle things differently. And it's just, there's no end of emotions around it. But I remember sitting there and I don't know if I think it was because of Ethan kind of, but you know, people sort of, the same thing, you know, oh, we don't do this on the holidays and I don't get out of bed on the birthday and I don't. And I remember kind of using that as this, for me, this is not how I want to be. And this is not how Jake would want his mom to be. And this is certainly is not what Ethan's mom could do. You know, I mean, I almost felt like I was like these different personalities,
sure,
right? Like I had to like keep them all sort of together. But I just remember being like, I can be perpetually sad for the rest of my life, which there is a piece of me that is just constantly heartbroken. But I can also take this and I can figure out how to, you know, put one foot in front of the other and
move forward.
And move forward, move through, you know?
But yeah, I think that's what we all have to do. In fact, as far as our podcast is concerned, that's what I often ask. And I want to ask you that. What's your message? How do you, for those who might be new to grief or grief might be new to them, how did you put one foot in front of the other? And what do you recommend that they do?
I feel like it is, you know, you got to think, I don't know that everyone believes in the same way, right? But I always have to think of like, I was Jake's mom, you know, and I was the person that, you know, when he was young, I was like his everything, right? Because it's like, you're the mom. And then I had to advocate for him and I had to provide for him. And you don't stop being that person. And I don't think he stops needing that person. This, you know, not everyone believes in these same sort of things, but I do believe he's still aware and a presence and part of it. And I think you just have to find whatever grain of good there is.
Yeah.
I do. I think that, you know, and even in these horrible moments, whether it's like living in the memory for a little bit or whatever it is, I just know that I feel like I would be letting Jake down if I allowed my grief and sorrow to turn me into someone that was not who he knew as his mom, if that makes any sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like it's a disservice to him. And then I also feel like, and I'm wondering if you ever feel this way with Kelly, I also, if there is this spiritual afterworld, if there's any of those things, I don't want him to feel bad. Like, I don't want him to look down on me and think I'm a mess and it's his fault, you know? Do you ever?
Yeah, of course, I think that's a great point. And I don't think people often think of that. But we believe, we want to believe that there is a place where they've ended up, which is whether you call it heaven or whether you call it afterlife, you want to make them proud.
There's a part of me, though, that's even sitting up there, like Kelly's probably hanging out with Jake, and they're like, oh, look at him.
Isn't
like,
that cool?
I think that's kind of cool, right?
Yeah, especially she was the teacher. And,
Like I always think of that, and I don't know. And sometimes I'm like, you know, when we talk about what things people say, like sometimes I'm like, oh, do I say the most like wacky things now to people? Because like, I'll be like, oh, you know, they're with Jake. Brian sometimes like, I don't know that they want to hear that, you know?
You never know.
You never know. I was like, well, but I just do. I think that you've got to figure out how to honor your person, right?
And isn't Jake's help from heaven a gift in that regard? And Kelly's angels is a gift in that regard. Yeah. So we're honoring them while doing good.
100%. What do you think Kelly's thinking of all this? Of what do you think she thinks of Kelly's angels? What do you think she thinks of?
I like to think that she is smiling on it. She had a beautiful smile, so I like to think that she's smiling down upon it. She was a little, even though she was a teacher, she was a little bit more reserved in front of her students. Not so much. I know she used to get deathly afraid of parent-teacher nights.
Oh, really? They're
totally different. She could teach in front of 25 third graders all day, every day.
But get the parents.
Parents, yeah. She was scared to death. In fact, we used to create videos so she could play the video. And that would be most of her presentation.
That's awesome.
I'm Chris Capistasci. Tonight's top story, we'll introduce you to the best class at the Queensbury Middle School.
Hi, parents. I'm Miss Donahue, and I'm going to take you on a walking tour of your children's day.
At 10 o'clock, we begin our math lesson. Occasionally, I'll have students come up and work out a problem on the overhead. Social studies is the next subject we tackle, and that begins at 10:40. By 11:20, the children are ready for a break from the subjects.
Hi, Bob. Connor, tell me about your day. Was it exciting?
Look at me and smile, Connor. Today's Monday, Memorial Day. And we're having a picnic here at Hubby Pond. And Daddy's working. Mommy just got back from the hospital. 9 days in the hospital.
Ten.
We'll count it out later. I'll show you. And these guys are going to show me a fancy bike ride. McKenna Rose! You big girl! Oh my gosh. This is what I've been waiting for this moment for so long.
But I think she would be smiling down. She'd be a little sheepish that her name is used so often. But I think she would love it. And I think that she would love the fact that it helps her children connect with her. So I think most of all, selfishly, that's, in fact, when we started the organization, when we started Kelly's Angels, that was the selfish goal for me, because people were so kind and helpful and friendly to us, even strangers. I wanted to show my children that we could pay it forward.
So it's funny that you use the word selfish, because I use that a lot also, because people are like, oh, you do such good work at Jake's Help from Heaven. And sometimes they're like, it's so selfless. And I'm like, oh, no, it's not selfless. It's very selfish. Like it allows me to be so connected, A, to a population that I know and love and feel like I can offer something to.
Yeah.
And it allows me to talk about my boy all the time. Like there's, you know, it's great work and I know it benefits people, but it's selfish, right? Like it gives us this chance.
Yes, it can
like
be
not
both.
In a bad way, no. Like not bad selfish, but
it can be both
selfless and selfish,
right?
All at the same time.
Heather, this was fun. Thanks for chatting with me.
Thank you, Mark. This was great. I loved it.
Thanks to everyone listening as well. I hope you'll subscribe to this podcast and listen to future episodes. If you'd like to be a guest to share your story, or if you have a topic idea, let us know by sending an email to kellysangelsinc@gmail.com. I'm Mark Mulholland. Until next time, stay on The Upbeat.
If you enjoy The Upbeat, please subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have topics you'd like us to cover on The Upbeat, please send your ideas to theupbeatpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. On behalf of the volunteer board of Kelly's Angels and the families we help who are facing life-threatening conditions, thank you for listening to The Upbeat.
Nice job, McKenna Rose.
Thanks, Dad. You too.